Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 319 of the Roguecast, recorded January 12, 2021. Prepare yourself for glistening rock.
Greetings from snow-drenched Austin.
Sun and snow-drenched is actually accurate.
Hey, in my neighborhood, there are still snowmen lurking about.
Oh, all our snowmen have melted.
Yeah. I noticed there was still some little pockets of snow and ice at my apartment the other day. But yes, it snowed vociferously on Sunday, a few days before this.
The most snow I have seen in... What, 20 years of living here? 25 years of living here? Like, I've never seen snow like that here.
That's why I'm still down, because I was working solo that day, and I did not get to get out and enjoy any snow.
I did, and I hated it.
Yeah, we really should have swapped spots,
we
Randy.
We should have, except I would have been miserable here, too.
Yeah, so. but your misery is okay by me.
That's fair. And vice versa.
Yeah, so it works out. I'm watching you, Lander. But I did on Facebook see that it seems like everybody had a good time and posted pictures of, the best cruddy Austin snowmen we could get rolling.
There was enough snow to make legit snowmen.
Like, oh, yeah.
Every other year, every time we've ever gotten snow here, I'm from Colorado, I've seen snow.
Yep.
And it's always like a little tiny bit, and it's like just not enough to build.
This right, it's whatever good. You can like scrape off the roof of your car.
This was good, like you could totally make a big old snowman out of this.
Yep.
My kid made two snowmen and married them. Apparently.
Ah. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that's it. We'll see you again in 20 years, Snow.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know. Global warming. We'll probably get some more
soon. Yeah, climate change will take care of that for you.
No, global warming. It's going to look like Road Warrior in about a year.
I think that's the lie. I think there will be pockets of that.
That is why it is climate change is how they more accurately address it now.
We're going to have the end of... What's the days?
Day after tomorrow?
Day after tomorrow, crazy storms.
Yeah. Super deadly lightning storms with like 20 tornadoes at a time. Then super ice waves.
Chase us down a corridor.
Yeah, and then we'll probably... and then it's also going to become... what was the one in Tropic Thunder, the disaster movie.
Oh, yes.
God.
It's something hot.
Yeah.
Scorcher.
Scorcher, yes. Scorcher 6, global meltdown.
Global meltdown, yeah.
Who left the fridge open? God. Yeah, we're going to get that bouncing around between that. By the way, if anybody hasn't seen that, Tropic Thunder is a funny movie in any case.
Yep.
But it opens with a bunch of fake trailers, and you could just, I'm sure, find them on YouTube. There's several good ones in there. But Scorcher, their spoof of Hollywood disaster movies, is particularly good.
It's great, yeah. And also action franchises.
Yes.
not a ton on store news. We're mostly restocking after Christmas, but we did get a bunch of new statues in.
Yeah, there's some cool ones. There's there's like a Lex Luthor and his battle armor that looks great.
Yep. There's a we've got the Cyberpunk ones that came in just before Christmas.
Did we ever mention the Batman one? I know that was...
There's some good new Batman ones.
But they did the Batman one from Deceased.
Yeah.
Where he's wearing Mr. Freeze's, like a captured armor suit to try and slow down the necrotosis or whatever they call the zombie process in there so that he doesn't zombie too fast.
There's also a sort of Jim Lee-inspired Batman.
Yep.
Yep.
And then not an old Batman, but it was sort of like the... Norm Breifogel, kind of that era of Batman.
Also, let's not forget The Witcher in a Bath.
That's right. if you need... what's his name?
Geralt?
Geralt. Yeah, if you need to see Geralt and, with his legs dangling over the side of a tub, sexying up your counter or a mantelpiece, then we have got what you need.
It has a rubber ducky in the bathtub.
That's true. You prepare yourself for glistening Geralt.
we also got Gloomhaven back in. We got a couple copies of that. That's once every twice a year.
For those who don't know, you should just Google it and check out a video. But it is a campaign based what do you call those games?
Legacy.
A legacy board game where you're essentially like a one time playthrough. But although I believe this has sort of more methods than most.
It's like a dungeon crawl.
Yeah, it's almost like if you did the legacy parts of Descent, but, it's like you go back to town and you buy gear, you improve your character. I've played it before, too, but it also has, like, really tight tactical combat issued through sort of a control of a deck of cards that you build around your character, and you can, as things go along, add in new cards that give you cooler options, cooler weapons, and all this stuff. It's super awesome, but...
It's also heavy enough you can kill a burglar with it.
She can kill two burglars with it. Yep. It's super ridiculously heavy, because you get so much stuff. But yeah, this game sort of, while pricey, it sells itself. People know it by reputation, and there's a reason why it's out for, like, 6 months at a time.
Yep. And we kickstarted the Frosthaven, which is a sequel that's, like, more of an Arctic adventure thing.
Yep.
But I believe that's not coming until, like, 2022.
Yeah. So if you've been watching for it, you have a brief window of opportunity here.
Yep. Also, Altered Carbon has an RPG. If you're looking for some cyberpunk RPGs, there's a slightly more futuristic cyberpunk, but it's really cool. The RPG is made by Renegade, who do a lot of good board games and RPG games. And Cyberpunk Red is impossible to find, so this may be the best chance you have at getting a cyberpunk game.
Sleeve up. Isn't that what they call them? Sleeves?
Yes. Sleeves. Bodies are sleeves.
Yep.
I'd like to live in a world. I want to sleeve in different bodies.
Yep. I would like to Jim Carrey up at any given time.
I like it, yeah.
90s Jim Carrey, by the way. Just,
no.
How's that for a fright?
There's some weird implications on the whole re-sleeving thing.
No, I want to sleeve in different bodies.
Snuffleupagus it is.
Speaking of sleeving different bodies... Wonder Woman 3 has been greenlit by Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot.
That is an oblique reference to the creepy subplot.
It's not oblique. Everybody's talked about that.
Yeah, but that is a deep dive reference, and I respect you for it, even though I liked Wonder Woman, and how dare you try and creep it up.
So, we're going to talk about Wonder Woman 84 at the tail end of the show, we think. It depends on how time works. But
yeah, I think we're probably going to get around to
and
it.
And by we, I mean... Dave and Nick and Anna, because I'm the one person at Rogues who didn't like it, and I don't want to buzzkill everybody.
What a swell guy.
So that's all the buzzkill you're going to get from me. Because Wonder Woman 3 being greenlit, despite the sort of mixed reviews, I think is a good thing. I think, for one thing, we don't need this... Hollywood's always been bad about, like, every female-led movie has to be, like, the best ever, or else it's like, female movies don't work. That has never put on any... guy-led action movie.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's the same thing for so many movies that feature, what would be, minority characters or minority by Hollywood standards, that is to say, poorly represented characters.
Yeah.
You get one movie, and, you know, if it happens to not go as well as hoped, it's like,
nobody
they want to write
these.
It off.
Yep.
Yeah,
nobody wants these.
And that sucks, and so, yes, I'm happy to see that that's already done well. And actually, Wonder Woman, I will say this, despite definitely there's criticisms out there, but I think it did gangbusters, though, Wonder Woman 84.
Did it?
Yeah. I'm understanding that it was,
it opened with, like, one of the highest, like, theater grossing...
in pandemic times?
But yeah, I thought it also did well as far as, like, purchases and
yeah, it
stuff
definitely
like that.
Drove up HBO Max's...
it was one of the first major
viewership.
Ones to kind of... major movies to do that. Let's see, there was Mulan and something else.
That's the big one.
I mean,
yeah, that's interesting. That's,
but
that's
I also... Interesting. I don't have notes in front of me or anything on, like, how well it did overall. That's what I had heard.
I mean, we'll see what... HBO Max continues their release schedule for the rest of the year.
I know their next big one is.
Next big one is this year, is in like a week. The Denzel Washington, Jared Leto, Jake Gyllenhaal sort of serial killer thriller that is getting released.
Okay,
all right. It is lovingly referred to as the genre called garbage crime in one of my other podcasts. However, this one does look good. The trailer looks
I don't know
great.
What that genre is. Is that like
it's
what Seven is?
It's kind of like C-list story with like better actors than you would expect it to be.
Okay. Because Jake Gyllenhaal's really good.
Yep.
Jared Leto, I'm not sure how
I mean,
about, but he's been in some good stuff.
I mean, Denzel Washington.
Denzel Washington, yeah.
But he is like...
He's also been in some trashy stuff.
Yeah, Man on Fire, Equalizer.
He moved to the older action hero role. Yeah. Most pioneered maybe by... why can't I say his name?
Liam Neeson.
Taken, Liam Neeson. But, you know, Sean Connery and those guys been doing it for a while, too.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to this one. I don't know if it's going to drive, like, people to watch it, but it's something new.
I could watch a trashy thriller.
Yeah, in, serial killer in pandemic movie. Times and with the way things are, the vaccines being rolled out in yeah, kind of weird
we got
way.
Time to stay for a while.
I think yeah. we're gonna be seeing more movies that were slated to come out delayed again. Yep. So
when am I gonna get my? Oh, you know, I thought it was Blumhouse, but I think it's A23, isn't that kind of...
Yeah, the Green Knight. The Green
yeah,
Knight.
When am I going to get my Green Knight movie?
God damn, you must see that in the theater.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to act it out with puppets like that's King of the Hill manger babies.
I mean, Randy and I are going to act out Black Widow with, like, action yeah. figures yep, at this sure. point. Because yep. I'm dying to watch that damn movie. Maybe I can befriend David Harbour
honestly,
and he can...
At this point, I'm just kind of hoping I'll be vaccinated by the time it comes out in, what, May? That's possible.
I don't think it's going to come out again.
You don't think it's going to move it again?
I think with the way numbers are still like climbing even more so.
We'll see.
I don't know. I still want to see like Top Gun. I want to see all these stupid movies that they're just sitting there. They're done. They're sitting in their cases and digital files. Yep. And people want
to watch
them.
Them to release them all on the digital.
I'll pay them. I'll pay $20-$30. I want to see Bond, damn it.
Me too.
I'll just buy them at this point.
I was watching all the Daniel Craig Bonds with my brother and a buddy of ours in prep for this new one. And then suddenly, a year later...
Does Quantum of Solace have a bigger impact now?
You know, I have rewatched a few years ago, and I, aside from the fact that it's weirdly boring premise is, like, scathingly real. Thanks a lot, Nestle. You know, I had already kind of made my peace and found that I liked it as kind of a second part to Casino Royale.
So, HBO has in addition to all the movies they're getting, they have some original shows. One of them is Our Flag Means Death, which is, despite the title, a comedy based...
Oh, right.
This is by Taika Waititi, who's executive producing and directing the pilot. And it's going to star Rhys Darby, who was in Flight of the Conchords and also...
He was their manager, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
The man who can do no wrong at this point.
So he is amazing.
The premise of this is loosely based on the true story of Stead Bonnet, a well-to-do gentleman farmer and child of wealth who suffers a midlife crisis and becomes captain of Revenge, a pirate ship in the early 18th century.
It does seem like something that would fit his sensibilities very well.
Yep.
It says he bought a sailing vessel, named it Revenge, and traveled with his paid crew along the eastern seaboard of what is now the United States, capturing other vessels and burning other Barbadian ships.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That sounds great.
This is a movie?
This is a TV
show.
TV
show, okay.
So that sounds like fun.
It does.
I'm in.
And what? Who's that for? HBO
Max.
Cool.
There is some news that is not news. We figured we'd talk about it. Kevin Feige was interviewed by Collider, and he let slip, basically, they asked him about Deadpool 3, and he's like, we're working on it. It's going to be R-rated. Ryan Reynolds is working on the script. We don't know when we're going to film it. We don't know when he's going to finish it. He's busy. We've got plans. But some people, by which I mean Nick and Anna, were gleeful because it meant they got to tell me and Dave that Deadpool was going to be in the MCU.
Well, you know, there were all these headlines that were like, Deadpool will be in the MCU and will be R-rated. And it was like, so I guess sort of, all what we knew was going to happen. There was no way they were going to go from super successful R-rated to PG.
Yeah.
But they did release a PG-13 version of it.
Yes, they did.
Right, but like an ironic and just more ways to make money
including
kind of
Fred
version. Including
Fred Savage and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do give them credit for that. That is a hilarious decision.
And I say gleeful because I'm excited. I'm more reveling in your hatred of Deadpool because I know it's...
I believe Anna was too.
It's an inevitability that he's going to show up in the MCU.
It's not inevitable.
More than Thanos, he is inevitable.
I hope he ends like Thanos did. I hope Tony Stark snaps him out of existence even though he's dead. Hope he comes back and snaps him out of existence.
No, I want to see Ryan Reynolds and Tom Holland bounce back and forth.
Ooh.
I hope Josh Brolin himself, the actor, just snaps him out of existence.
Yes.
That means Josh Brolin can come back to the MCU as Cable.
Sure.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot that.
And then he reveals these Thanos and snaps them both out of existence.
Those are two pretty major characters to play.
It is.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think do we know any... Is there anything more to this than rated R Deadpool?
Yeah.
Seemed likely anyway.
Yeah.
MCU, we kind of knew was going to happen, right?
Knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean, like, basically, I think, Randy, you and I fear that he's going to, like, show up in, like, the whatever the next big serious Avengers story is,
yep,
and be, like, cracking wise and talking to the viewer and really undermining it.
Yes.
This is, like, the worst-case scenario, yep, if they did that. But the Marvel guys have been proven, like, so kind of clever about all their decisions,
yeah,
that chances are they probably would not do that.
And here's the thing, and Rani will even say this. The Deadpool movies are fun. And I feel like Ryan Reynolds and Kevin Feige will still respect the MCU while having some jokes as well.
We'll see.
And I honestly think we'll get the best version of a Deadpool movie we could get with Nick, them in charge.
If you had your druthers,
mm-hmm,
would you like to see Deadpool guest star as the new Stan Lee showing up in every single Marvel movie that comes out with some sort of slightly meta humor?
No.
I hate that question.
Yeah, no, I just, as I was saying it, I was like,
no, cause I don't,
it almost works.
Oh, yeah, it almost works.
It does.
In
a way,
because then they get him in and out quick,
yeah,
he makes some quick meta joke or,
yeah,
whatever, and he's off screen, they can punch it, they can make sure it's a good joke.
Yeah. And then Deadpool's in every Marvel movie. Why,
yeah,
would you do that? Why would you put that on the universe?
Randy, if I've said it, they've thought it. They've had a creative meeting.
I don't think that's something that they do, though. I think you're going to give him a movie and he'll have
Perfect way, because those scenes are easy to dismiss.
Yep.
But there'll be some connections, like...
That's worse, act to me, is it, like, if they do anything vaguely seriously.
Because you can have Bob from Hydra. You can get him from, like, an old Hydra agent.
I don't want any of this.
What if Hydra, instead of being goofy, was actually scary?
That'd be good.
Like it's been.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Anyway.
All right. We're going to pause the podcast now while Randy and I go kill ourselves.
And we're back with the Ghosts of David and Randy.
In happier news, they announced Marvel's Moon Knight. They're talking about the show. It is
this one that's going to star Oscar Isaac?
He's apparently in talks to play the role, but it sounds like they've
not firmed up yet.
Locked it down. But I guess the showrunner is Jeremy Slater, who did Umbrella Academy,
yep,
which is good. The director is Mohamed Diab, who did the movie Clash. And they brought in indie horror filmmakers Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead to direct some of the episodes. I don't know what... Okay, so they worked on VHS Viral.
Oh, okay.
Which
is the
then,
second one?
Yeah, it sounds like they directed Synchronic, which had Jamie Dornan and Anthony Mackie.
Oh, yeah, that was the most recent one. So these are the guys who did that, that movie about the alien cult, or the...
Resolution? Members of a possible UFO cult?
Yes, the UFO cult that we...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't think
you liked it. I liked it.
I liked parts of it, actually. I don't know. I feel like I can say that they're effective directors.
Yeah.
That's who these... They're the directors.
Yeah, they're directing some of the episodes.
Okay. I mean, that sounds fine.
It sounds like they're going to start shooting in Hungary in March. Premiere on Disney Plus in 2022.
Hungary?
Yep.
Why are they shooting in Hungary?
I'm sure that's where they're going to shoot. But Kevin Feige said they're going to make use of Egyptian iconography and that one of their directors, their main director... his career started in Egypt, so they're definitely playing into the Egyptian stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah,
and I know it is going to be the white costume.
That's cool.
Do we know if they're bringing in any of the Warren Ellis elements?
I would bet they will, but they haven't said.
There's no way that they avoid doing the thing that really people latched onto, and it is a cool thing. Is the notion that this suit is like, unlike Batman, he wants to be seen.
Yeah.
You know, he
yeah.
wants to be
yeah.
the madman running at you, and basically play him as somewhat unhinged.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not a bad idea. Randy, I think our favorite era was where he was sort of a Batman who had multiple lives that he was sort of living so that he could, you know, all essentially to in service to fighting crime.
Well, the original stuff that Doug Mensch wrote with Sienkiewicz on art
yeah.
was very pulpy. Like, it was very much a pulp adventure series
yeah.
in the universe, and I would kind of like them to go that route.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the... Ellis and the is it Lemire who was
Lemire took over after
he sort of was definitely kind of into the service of Khonshu kind
yeah.
of the
right.
avatar of him,
and they did do some questioning of like, you know, is this guy just off his rocker or whatever, but
as long as they don't bring in the Bendis where he's like three personalities.
I actually think that we can feel safe from that.
Yes.
I think that was not love. what was I going to say? The Warren Ellis one also had him as a little bit of like a Sherlock Holmes consulting detective thing. Yeah. And I don't know if I love that, but if that's part of the story, I could potentially work with it.
If it means we get the ghost armor, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
Last bit of comic book news. Kurt Busiek and Yildiré Cynar? I don't think that's probably Yildiré. The artist who worked on X-Men, Iron Man, Legion of Superheroes.
It's a good artist.
With cover art by Alex Ross. They're doing a series called The Marvels, which is basically... It's a sprawling series telling stories that span decades, ranging from epic adventures to intense human drama, from the street level to the cosmic, starring literally anyone from Marvel's very first heroes to the superstars of tomorrow. It is basically going to be Astro City in the Marvel Universe.
And interestingly, Astro City was sort of like Marvel's as a writ large.
Right.
Yeah. As an independent thing. That sounds great to me.
I'm excited about this.
Yeah, no, this sounds wonderful.
What are the stories that were coming out recently that have
snapshots.
Been pretty good? Snapshots, yeah. Where they were doing similar stuff, you know, jumping in from, like, in Marvel's Silver Age and Bronze Age and stuff like that, with human-centric stories around these characters.
I mean, honestly, this might be the series that Busiek was born to write.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like Astro City is that series.
Yeah.
But, I think he's a guy who has never lost his love for Marvel. Like, he did his own... He created a really amazing independent superhero universe, you know, that was an homage and amalgamation of Marvel and DC in his own imagination. Yeah. But, I think he loves those playgrounds, and I think he's going to be a good fit for
that. What is the status of Astro City right now?
We don't know. He was supposed to be doing graphic novels with Brent Anderson.
Yeah.
But they haven't had a new one in a while, and I wonder if it fell apart.
Was it at Image now, or...?
It was at Vertigo.
Oh, it was at Vertigo, which died.
Yeah, which died. So I don't know if they're without printing rights, like if there's still Black Label. I would bet, since he's now working at Marvel, that fell through.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the plan is from here on out. I would love for them to do more.
If they put it out through the Black Label line, they should just reprint Astro City and just drop F-bombs in there.
Yep.
I would love for them to actually get Astro City back in print.
I would also like
that. It's amazing.
If they put out, like, collections that each had 12 issues in them...
Yep.
By the way, the first two Astro Cities are... the first volume was basically six amazing standalone stories, and the second one was the story of the Confessor.
Yep.
Their sort of supernatural Batman-type character. Also a great storyline. That trade paperback would be, like, one of the coolest things ever, all 12 issues in one thing.
I feel like, unfortunately, because they bounced from different places, they were at Homage Studios, then they were in Image, then they were at DC. Because it's been at so many places... It may be hard for them to get a new contract.
It
may not be easy to go back to Image. They're like, well, you left us to go to DC.
You know, it's interesting, amongst all of that, though, it was pretty much always, at its core, Kurt Busiek and Brent Anderson on art, and Alex Ross on covers.
Yeah.
A little variation here and there, but like 95% of the time, that's the team.
Yeah.
So, like, the series itself is wildly consistent.
Oh, yeah.
It's just been everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to have Astro City back in print. I'm very glad that I have all of it in trades, because it's a fantastic series.
It is.
All right, that's news for the week. We'll take a second, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, January 13th, and let's start with Future State, which has six new releases this week, I think?
Yes, yep. I think so.
And just as a reminder, for anybody who doesn't know, DC's Future State is a two-month event, kind of taking a peek forward at the different possible futures for various DC heroes. Or sometimes with new characters taking over their roles, sometimes with the unexpected things happening to them, I guess, to the leads.
Yep. Yeah, similar.
Nick,
like,
you've read more than any of us, I think.
Yeah, and I honestly liked this week's books more than last week's books, even though there were some standouts. This week, I think my favorite one was Robin Eternal, which focuses on Tim Drake and Stephanie Brown as sort of last bastions of, like, Gotham against the weird magistrate.
Now, and the magistrate is kind of like a fascistic kind of overseer of Gotham, is it sort of, Nick, is this one of those Gothams where, like, there's no crime? Or is it there's still crime, but it's like the crackdown is hardcore?
Judge Dredd. There's crime, yeah. Magistrators, think of them as
like
judges.
Like creepier Judge Dredd, maybe?
A little bit. This has got beautiful artwork by Eddie Barrows, who actually worked on the Detective Comics, so it's sort of along those lines. Written by Megan Fitzmartin, which is... I think one of those writers who came out of their talent search.
Okay. We know there's a lot of new names on New 52.
Yeah.
Or New 52. Future State.
But it's really good about sort of where Tim Drake is, what he's doing, what Stephanie Brown is doing.
Now, I know there's different... Sometimes these are farther in the future or less far. How old is Tim Drake in this? Did he go from being like 20? He could. No, I don't know.
He looks like he's Nightwing's age. So okay, he looks so like...
This might just be like 10 or 15 years in the future, tops.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely sort of one of the more contemporary ones that we've been seeing. It was really good. To sort of go with that, Dark Detective, which is the basically the Bruce Wayne Batman.
Didn't that have some Dan Mora artwork in it?
Yeah, Dan Mora is doing the main story. I'm forgetting who does the... Oh, it's Mariko Tamaki who's writing.
Writing, right.
He always leaves you wanting Mora.
Mora's design of the new Batman, or the new costume, which is sort of kind of a year zero, back to sort of... Not like basics, but it looks like more cobbled together in kind of a way. Yeah. From like a sporting goods store, which sounds silly, but it kind of works.
Yeah, no, it looks all right. It looks. I mean, also, Dan Mora makes everything look cool, so.
And then the backup story, weirdly, is a Matthew Rosenberg written Grifter story.
Which, that is weird.
It is weird.
What's the pitch, though? Is Grifter like something to do with Lucius Fox?
He is basically Luke Fox.
Luke Fox, okay.
Comes to him and is trying to get out of Gotham and thinks Grifter can help him. And Grifter is trying to lay low and gets sucked into this insanity and kind of goes from there. It's a weird kind of...
He's like, every time I try and get out, they make me put my red handkerchief back on again.
Yes, that is exactly what the pitch is.
I made it as hardcore as I could.
Superman Wonder Woman, which sees Jonathan Kent and Yara Flor sort of there, kind of how they kind of blend together.
Are they a couple?
No, they're good friends.
Okay.
And just it kind of gives an interesting status quo to each of them. I mean, Jonathan is definitely there for Metropolis, and Yara Flor, we get to see a little bit more than what we did in her actual book and sort of what she's doing, why she is... who she is.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I don't really want to give that away because I thought it was a really interesting kind of state of affairs of why she, or who
but
she
actually
was.
But if people had picked up that first issue of Wonder Woman last week, this might be a good compliment to
it. Yeah, and it's wonderful art in here, very expressive. Honestly, across the board, the art is fantastic.
The art on Tuesday is really good, yeah.
And makes me really happy that a lot of these creative teams are going to be sticking around, because if this is the state of the art for DC, this is like some of the best I've seen. And then there's Future State Titans, or Teen Titans, which is sort of like the darkest of the darkness of the books this week. Written by Tim Sheridan, beautiful art by Rafa Sandoval, but sort of talks about a... kind of a big climactic thing that happened with the Titans that kind of killed a bunch of them, and sort of where they are in the grand scheme of things, about sort of in the wreckage of Titan's Tower. It looks like villains are now working with them. There's a cool new, like, Johnny Thunder kind of character. Starfire's got a new outfit that she looks really, really cool. Raven is doing awesome things. So it's kind of like the things I wanted to see the Titans do.
A fair number of the core Titans are still around.
Yeah, they are, but they're in different ways, and they're all looking for... And
is Beast Boy deceased boy?
No, but there is a new status quo for Cyborg and Beast Boy, which I thought was interesting. So,
okay.
And then there's the Future State Green Lantern, which I'm not a huge fan of the first story, which features a new sort of John Stewart.
But I will say, it was an interesting concept.
It looks like all
the rings are essentially, what,
they've
depowered?
Stopped. Yeah, they've stopped
and
working.
And so it's kind of about these guys working as like an intergalactic sort of peacekeeping force or whatever, but it's like, they're just like warriors and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's John Stewart, Solek, and Gnort.
And a very feisty Gnort or Nort, and I've never remembered how it's pronounced.
It's actually pronounced Jack. Yeah, huh. it's in his language. It's weird.
Neat. However, this is one of those giant-sized ones, so there's three stories in all. There's a Jessica Cruz story as the second one, which features the Sinestro Corps infiltrating a like the Green Lantern base.
Yeah.
And her having to defend it without her ring.
Yep.
It's really, really cool. And then the third story, I loved because it was a Guy Gardner story. Mm-hmm. And the writer of this really got to the core of Guy. His name is Ernie Altbacher, which seems like a fake name, but...
No, it's actually pronounced Jack.
Oh, okay. I like that. Everyone who wrote or drew on this is named Jack.
Yeah,
it's going to make the credits a lot easier.
I love that when he Guy gets depowered, he's wearing his Warriors t-shirt.
Oh, nice. From his old bar and his former... non-Green Lantern but superhero identity.
It's like what he does when he gets... He's on a peacekeeping mission, and he gets depowered, and what does he do when he gets stuck on an alien world?
Okay.
And it's just a fun concept. There was also a Justice League one, which I
we don't have a lot of, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah.
And I will say that was an exceptional one, written by Joshua Williamson.
No, Nick, we don't have a lot of them.
I know. But...
It was terrible.
There's a fun callback to a Grant Morrison Justice League story,
right.
And I was like... Oh, that's awesome.
I'll also say this. The first wave that largely sold out last week, they quickly went back to print on.
Yeah.
So with any luck, they will do some of the same.
Expect the same, yeah.
What else do we got this week?
All right, so leaving aside the DC stuff, King in Black is going strong this week. There's a few tie-ins. There's Gwenom versus Carnage, which is Sean McGuire doing sort of a jokey thing. Basically, Spider-Gwen has had a symbiote as her costume for like 3 years now. And that is going to tie into Null. But basically, she has also been going to college in our dimension while living in her own. And I guess the way this story works out is that Mary Jane from her dimension basically gets a symbiote and becomes a Carnage. So it's basically going to be Spidey. It's going to be Mary Jane. It's going to be Gwen, Spider-Gwen Venom versus Mary Jane Carnage.
Okay.
And apparently, this is something Sean McGuire's been wanting to do for like 3 years. Like, since she got the book, she wanted to do this idea.
That is a very specific thing to want to do, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea.
No, it's a fun first issue. It's very jokey for being such dire circumstances.
Yeah,
like,
well, in their universe, they're like best friends.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of one of those, like, there's enough King in Black stuff, stories going on that they're like, let's do one that's not grimdark, end of the world.
Speaking of grimdark.
Meanwhile, over in Thunderbolts, I love Thunderbolts. Thunderbolts at its best should be basically Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
This Thunderbolts, I just noticed that it has Kingpin in the O. So basically, the pitch on the Thunderbolts here, if you don't know it, Thunderbolts was a team of, like, they seem to be superheroes. They turned out to be Baron Zemo and the Masters of Evil, and they were going undercover as heroes to try and basically take over the world.
Yeah, they kind of rebranded for treachery.
And then Warren Ellis did a version of them where they were basically a Suicide Squad.
Basically the
type.
Suicide Squad from Marvel.
So in this one, basically the Kingpin, who is mayor of New York in the Marvel Universe, puts together a bunch of villains and is like, I need you to go out and take care of these symbiotes that are destroying my city. He's got a specific mission for them. And he also is like, and people work for me, don't wear masks because I've made masks illegal. So you guys have to wear your, you know, just, you, they're not plain clothes basically, but like, you can't have masks. Like, you show your faces.
Yeah.
So the team is Taskmaster is effectively the leader, Batroc, Mr. Fear, Star, that evil Captain Marvel basically, and a techie dude named Ampere and Rhino.
Okay.
And basically they go out into the streets, they have to face down this invasion of like symbiote dragons, and it's really good, you guys. I really liked this.
This is Matthew Rosenberg.
Yeah. It's got Juan Ferreira art, so it's really pretty. And basically, it's just these villains who, they're just trying to get by in this apocalypse that's going on.
I did appreciate the scene with Fisk sort of giving the rundown and, like, you have a choice. You can say no.
Right.
One does. And just, it's interesting what happens to that character.
Yeah, it is definitely not. I also like the scene with Rhino later on where Taskmaster's like, none of you are quitting. And Rhino's like, I'm going. He's like, not you, bud. You go ahead. He's like, and he says, he's like, I'm playing the odds of getting eaten by one of those dragons. It's quicker than having him stomp me to death. But, yeah. So that was fun. There's also the Union number 2, which I really enjoyed.
That's UK Heroes, right?
What's that? Yeah, the UK. UK Heroes. Then there is the Chris Claremont Anniversary Special.
Yeah, this is kind of like Chris Claremont returning to some of the characters he's, like, best known for writing on in his X-Men days, and kind of shining the light back on him.
It's where he uses Hela and
Daniel Moonstar, who had become a Valkyrie.
That's sort of a bridging story for several different things.
Yeah, it's also got Gambit, Binary, and yeah, some cool stuff in there. So if you're an old school Claremont fan, you want to check that out. There's also some Sienkiewicz art and some of that.
Yeah.
Couple of indie books that caught my attention. One is Ha Ha, number one. This is by the creative team, I think, that did, or at least by the writer, that did Ice Cream Man, which is this sort of strange...
Oh, that makes sense.
And this has beautiful art by Vanessa Del Rey.
I think it has that, yeah, the people who like kind of weird cult comics should check this out. And if you liked Ice Cream Man, you should check it out.
This is a weird one. Basically, it's a clown. He is legitimately a clown. He's working in a failing circus. He has a wife and kids. The circus goes under, and then his day gets super weird. It is strange, like psychedelic horror in some ways. It's a very strange... I couldn't possibly explain the premise of this book. But it's weird and kind of engaging, and if you like sort of creepy weird, I would point you to it. There's also Space Bastards, which is Derek Robertson, who worked on The Boys. Basically, I think... Is he writing this one, too?
No, it's actually different.
Artist. I don't know who the writers are, Eric Peterson and Joe Aubrey, but basically it is a space mercenaries kind of thing with really nice Derek Robertson.
I think they're like Roughneck Couriers.
Yeah, Roughneck Couriers. And then, Dave, you read Serial number one?
Yeah, I just want to mention this new one from Terry Moore that before it turned like really bizarre halfway through and had like a strange dream sequence, it kind of reminded me of that movie...
Gone Girl?
Yes, but also if...
Hard Candy,
yeah. Isn't that what was going on, Nick, at the beginning, if I interpreted that right?
But it feels...
And that was the, Hard Candy. Basically, it was a story in which a guy who, like, seems like a little bit of a creepy, predatory, like, restaurant owner is trying to essentially sexually assault a young girl, but she may well have planned and prepared for this and for what happens to him.
Yeah.
And then, like, part of the story, if I'm not mistaken, Nick, it was like a dream sequence that follows, like, literally her dreams.
Yeah.
Which allows Terry Moore to do his kind of odd cartoony stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if it all works. I have to read it again. but Terry Moore fans should check it out. And there is a lot of, like, his normally gorgeous black and white artwork. But if, he did some of his more cartoony stuff around Strangers in Paradise, and he did that, like, side strip that was kind of a little bit more like a newspaper comic strip. This has elements of that between the darker stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, what else? Is that
and
everything
then,
for us?
That Texas Blood gets a trade. This is Jacob Phillips, Sean Phillips' son, I think, doing the art. Chris Condon doing the writing. This was their
surprise buzz book for us.
Yeah, and it's $10 for 6 issues. It's on this nice sort of pulpy paper. So.
Yeah, a little bit of a sort of a, what do you call it, No Country for Old Men vibe.
Yeah, a little bit of that.
Would you say anybody reading Criminal should give it a shot?
I would think so. Yeah, I think that's going to be right up your alley.
What was that movie that had Chris Pine in it that was also...
Before the Devil Knows You're Dead?
No, not that one.
It's got one of those weird titles, though.
Yeah.
It says Texas in the title, right?
Maybe. I'm probably not going to be able to remember the name. We'll throw it out there later on if we can. But
Six Guns and Steers,
if you've seen that, starring Chris
Pine.
It was them robbing
the banks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Had some really good performances. Like, I watched that movie and I was like, oh, wow, Chris Pine can act.
Yeah. That is a really good movie. I like that one a lot. And it's the movie is called...
Six Guns and Steers.
Texas Crime Wave.
Hell and High Water. Hell or High Water,
that's the name.
Or Six Guns or Steers. what else is that?
That's the main stuff. There's a new issue of Immortal Hulk, which is great. There's a new issue of Amazing Spider-Man, new issue of Seven Secrets. Nick, anything else on your list?
Some X-Books, the 17th issue of Marauders, which is a Storm and Callisto.
I always like to see them fight.
There is some of that in here, but there's also some Kitty Pryde and Madripoor stuff that I thought was really cool.
Oh, cool.
And also Sword number 2, which is a big, giant King in Black tie-in as Abigail Bran decides to save us all from...
I think, unfortunately, it is a... We didn't know it was one at the time, so we're a little low on it, and we're hoping that we will be getting more.
Yep.
Dave, anything else on your list?
Nope.
All right. That's comics for the week. We're going to be back in a minute and talk about a bunch of stuff we've been wanting to talk about. Cobra Kai, Soul, the movies of Brian Duffield, and Wonder Woman 84. So stick around. Okay, so Dave has departed and Anna has joined us.
Hello.
Because Dave is behind on his TV, as always, perennially behind on his TV.
Yeah, I mean, that's just Dave.
And Nick was almost, we were going to talk about this last week, but Nick was behind on his TV because he got a Switch and Mario's taken over his life.
Yeah, Mario is definitely in several cases of Mario Kart and Super Smash Brothers, and now Link has sort of bled in here because I've got Breath of the Wild.
That game will destroy your...
That's like a job.
I started last night, and I got the Magnet ability, and that one's a lot of fun.
I feel like Breath of the Wild is bigger than, like, Austin.
Yeah,
I think it probably is.
I think so too. It's been a lot of fun. I think it's gorgeous. It's
a very pretty game. I can't play anything that open world.
I can't, because then I forget that I have friends and a life and to eat.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
It almost happened with Cyberpunk.
Yeah, but you went through that in record time.
I did. I blew through that game.
Yeah. Me too. All right, but we're not here to talk about video games. We're here to talk about Cobra Kai and Karate Gangs.
Yeah,
so...
welcome back.
I burned through season 3 of Cobra Kai in a day.
Oh, wow, a day.
Well, they're short episodes. They're only like half an hour.
I thought I went through it fast in 2.
Except for the last one, there were a couple that were 45.
There were a couple heavier, but it's a pretty quick binge, and it's very watchable.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Cully Hamner compared it to 80s comics, and I hadn't thought about it, but I think he's 100% right. This is like 80s comics.
Yeah.
It's got some melodrama.
Oh, yeah.
Silly melodrama.
And with a lot of 90s, I'm a villain, you're a villain, I'm a hero now, which...
And also you have to buy into sort of the weird premise that there are 3 karate dojos in Southern California that are all battling for supremacy.
They're very violent.
Yeah, I was going to say that they just go around and beat the shit out of each other for no reason. Yeah.
What I love is that they sort of nod at reality. Like, they have this whole thing where there's a big karate showdown at the end of season 2.
Yeah.
And then this opens with people being like, no more karate in the valley. Like,
not acceptable.
We're not going to do the tournament.
Yeah.
You can't have... They up security as if there was a school shooting. Like, they nod toward reality.
Yeah.
But yet, there are still karate gangs roaming the streets of the valley.
I mean, honestly, I think the fact that they make reference to the fact that it's absurd makes it even better, because it does make it feel a little more realistic, even though there are karate gangs roaming the valley.
Yes.
The fact that people are like, they're just karate gangs now, is delightful.
What did you think of the name of Johnny's new
Eagle Fang?
Eagle Fang karate? Eagles don't have fangs.
No, but it sounds badass.
It's really funny, because if they hadn't mentioned it, I would have been like, Eagle Fang karate does sound fucking cool.
Yeah.
But then I realized that I probably sympathized just a little too much with Johnny, because I was like, oh, actually, Eagle Fang karate is fucking stupid. Yeah, I can't believe I was bamboozled.
That's the great thing. Like, they undercut it every turn. Like, they are aware of what they're making. They're aware that The Karate Kid, while good, was not an Oscar-winning movie or anything.
Yeah.
Like, this is a silly franchise. And they steered into it. Like, they did the Japan stuff, because Karate Kid 2... As ridiculous as Karate Kid can be, it's a coming-of-age movie.
Mm-hmm.
Karate Kid 2, he's, like, in Japan dealing with cliched concepts of honor.
Yep.
And a guy who actually wants to duel him to the death.
Yeah.
And they do it this time where he goes to Japan for a completely reasonable reason, that he's going for, like, a car lease agreement with his, like, Japanese supplier.
I mean, his company is going under because the other competing dealership has made a exclusive deal with a...
Because
car company.
It makes so much sense to send him there. And then, of course, once he's there and his meeting doesn't go well, the bartender is like, hey, you know, maybe you just go and visit the home of your mentor. And he's like, oh, I'm going to turn this into a trip. And then we get this whole thing of him meeting the girl who was his other high school love.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who was his rival there. So you get to do a little Johnny thing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the big reveal of the good thing he did that actually keeps his business alive.
And I will say, the actor who plays Chosen is amazing.
He's delightful.
He's so much fun.
And I do also like that Chosen is sort of like a mirror of Johnny in a way. Johnny is still very much adjusting to trying to be a good guy. Like, at his core, he's still like a jock from the 80s.
Yeah.
But he's trying, and they sort of like set Chosen up to...
Johnny would never honk your nose, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean, is they set Chosen up to seem like like Johnny, but yeah. then at the end he's like a teddy bear.
Yeah.
Because he's already undergone the process of going from being a shithead to being a good dude.
We meet him at the end of his redemption
arc. I don't know if Chosen is a teddy bear. He was like...
He was terrifying, but it was all like a lead up to him tricking Daniel into getting his nose honked.
Yeah.
Then he's like adorable for the rest of it.
But he also, in typical like comic book fashion, he has secrets of Miyagi-Do karate that yeah. he didn't know, and it's going to help him fight his enemies.
I actually thought that was really cool. It kind of furthered the Miyagi story and like that there's another side to it. Like, there's another side to everything.
Also, they brought Allie back for a super great episode.
It was very excellent.
Like, that was a fantastic use of her. They teased her and I weren't sure. There was a moment in like episode 2, I think, where Johnny goes to the hospital and we knew that she was a doctor.
Yeah.
And he goes to the hospital to visit Miguel. And they brought in a specialist, and there's this blonde lady, and I'm like, oh, no way.
I think that would have been a good fake out.
But I didn't misread it. That was a fake out, right?
Yes.
They're like, oh, holy crap, and it wasn't. Yeah. So.
I did was deeply amused by Johnny's inability to write a Facebook message because he was like, "Let's do a novel
or to use a computer."
that's another thing.
That was truly one of my favorite parts too, because he does write this legitimately like thought out and heartfelt thing that's got introspection, and then at the end of the day, he's just like, "Nah, I'm a meathead." I don't know. And what about you?
He went through like three parts because one was the I'm just going to tell her everything.
Yeah,
and then he came up with the paragraph, and I was like, "This is what you should say." And then he was like, "No,
sucks." Yeah. I was gonna say it's very much like the what we were talking about earlier. The like it isn't actually that deep.
No,
like it's fun at the end of the day.
Yeah,
but
also I like the backstory on Kreese.
Yeah,
thought that was interesting. They did a good job of humanizing him without us ever making us sympathize with him.
He is humanized but not sympathetic. Yeah. There you go. You said it definitely right.
I still didn't need it. I'm okay with having
I liked it.
I just like him. I just want a villain. I don't need him to be redeemed or anything. He's just a villain.
And he's very terrifying as a villain, too. He's legitimately scary
he's
sometimes.
He's smart, too. Like, the bit where he, like Amanda, the wife, Machio's wife, she always seems to be smart. Like, she's above all this. Like, she and Allie love making fun of the karate gang shit.
Yeah.
But
she's got a temper, too.
She has a temper, and she goes in after Kreese in a way that basically gives him leverage, where he goes to the police and is like, I filed a restraining order, this woman's dangerous.
He's just I'm a kind veteran, and this woman came to my place of business and assaulted
and
me.
I think that was really interesting, because Kreese has always seemed like just this snake, and it's like, everyone should hate him. But then they're like, oh, no, he isn't stupid.
Yeah. He's cunning in the worst way possible.
The worst way, yeah.
But I actually, when he was talking about being, like, special forces in Vietnam in, like, the first or second season when he showed up, I was thinking to myself, like, that's bullshit, right?
Yeah. and they teased it that way, too. There was a bit where they showed in the second season of, like, maybe he was embellishing.
Yeah.
But clearly he wasn't.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then they did the flashback, and it's like, oh, he was not, in fact, just trying to... Yeah. Be manipulative.
Yeah, he was Special Forces, although it seems like they got captured pretty early in.
Immediately.
Yeah.
I'll say, though, this show has sort of catapulted these actors back into sort of the limelight in a way that I didn't think was possible. Because each season is, like, number one or two on the... on. If you take it for any seriously, Netflix is top 10.
Right.
Yeah.
Because who aggregates that or whatever. But still, it's being seen by countless people.
Actually,
and it is beloved.
I was going to say, even people that I would not have thought had any interest in this show, I've seen talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
There's no way that I would have watched it if I hadn't accidentally stumbled upon someone else in my house watching it, and I was like, oh, this looks really fun and quality, and then I watched it, and I was like, it's absolutely better than it has any right to be. It's so good.
And also, we didn't even talk about the kids, which is kind of the focus of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't talk about Miguel's arc. And Hawk's arc and his daughter, like, there's a lot of good stuff in here. I missed, what's the name of the girl? Misha? No. The girl who, Alicia. The girl the girl who, clearly the actress got another gig or something.
Yeah.
Who her parents moved her, the girl from Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
I missed her. I liked her, and I missed her. I missed her this season.
But I like that they're fleshing out the geek who gets the hot girlfriend.
Yes.
I know.
Hilarious.
He's great. I like his relationship with Hawk.
Yeah, it's I mean, that's, like, one of the things that I thought was most fun about it, is sort of, like, showing Hawk, who has been, quite frankly, like, one of the worst people on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Up until, like, a point suddenly being like, oh, are we the baddies?
Yeah.
Well, when you bring in the people that were actually, like, torturing him as a kid, that was a nice little turnaround.
I did like him beating the crap out of the guy who used to torture him.
Oh, just, like, roasted him, too. It was super good. The other thing is, when you did mention the younger, like, cast and crew of the show, they do this really excellent thing where they're simultaneously nostalgic and giving fans of the original source material stuff to, like, grab onto while not completely abandoning the younger cast to just be, like, side characters.
Yeah.
Like, it functions very much in the way that I wish a lot of legacy comics would.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're still getting those stories. It's just they're not, like, the ones running around being in karate gangs anymore.
Well, the obvious one is Hawkeye.
Yeah.
They did a good job of making Hawkeye sort of his own thing, mm-hmm. but Kate was the lead of the book.
Yeah.
Like when they did that was when not the Refraction stuff, mm-hmm. but the Kelly Thompson stuff, where Hawkeye was basically like Clint is basically just the old man. Like, what is he still doing here?
I really like Daniel's daughter. That actress is great.
She's really good.
And Miguel, which I still feel is the heart of the show.
Yeah.
He's so good. He's so charming.
I liked seeing him sort of fight back, you know, after being paralyzed. Yeah. And to see him and Johnny sort of work on that was probably some of the funniest stuff.
Yeah.
Because he's a meathead. He can only think. Here's a playboy. Look at that.
I can just look this stuff up on my phone. And he's like, it looks better on paper. But you'll never find out unless you get out of the chair.
He lights his hands on fire.
I was like, these are the most asinine and childish ways, but it is exactly how Johnny would think.
Yeah.
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 And what is it, William Zabka?
Mm-hmm.
He plays it perfectly.
He's great.
There is also, I love the sort of like running thread that he used to be a bully, even mm-hmm. though he's trying, like, they're trying to convince them to let the All Valley go, mm-hmm. and Miguel's like, kids were like beating me up and giving me swirlies, and someone on the panel's like, what's a swirly? And Johnny's like, it's where you stick your head or stick someone's head in the toilet and flush it, mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, and he's like, it's actually kind of funny.
it's also like when he goes back to the high school and tries to get a rousing speech to his people, and then when he walks away he pushes a geek and he's like, get out of the way, geek. He's like, sorry, this happened.
Yeah, he's like shoves a kid out of the way.
Yep. Yeah, the best.
I also like the callback of the female of Cobra Kai, which I'm blanking on her name.
I don't remember her name either.
But she was wearing the skeleton outfit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's a fun callback.
Yeah, but this show, basically, the tagline for this show is, it's so much better than it has any right to be.
Yeah,
like, it's twice as good as it needed to be to have me watch it. Like, yeah. I would have watched it even if it was just nostalgic.
It's made me want to actually go back and watch the Karate Kid stuff.
Yeah, me too. It's probably mm-hmm. a mistake.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, those had some quality to them.
It might be fun.
I've never seen Karate Kid 3. I gather we might should watch next Karate Kid to see if they're going to bring Hilary Swank in at some point.
I hope they do.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I was telling Anna before the podcast, I was like, bring in Jackie Chan, bring in Jaden mm-hmm. Smith. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, those would be fun kind of.
Yeah.
Have Jackie Chan be like a descendant of Miyagi or like a brother or something like
Except
that.
Except that Jackie Chan was Chinese and Miyagi is Japanese, yeah, which causes kind of a problem.
Did they flip that in the reboot?
The weird thing in the reboot is, like, it is all in China, and he is teaching him kung fu, not karate.
Why didn't they call it the Kung Fu Kid?
I guess because the licensing was different. Yeah. I don't know.
Fascinating.
Yeah, they should have called it the Kung Fu Kid, and it should have been a sideways nod.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that it wasn't just, like, a straight reboot.
Because it wasn't a bad... Because it's not in continuity. There's nothing in that reboot that would indicate... But it's a surprisingly good movie.
It is.
I enjoyed it.
I did too.
I took my kid to it, so...
That's fascinating.
All right, let's sidetrack to the other movie. We're not going to talk about Wonder Woman yet.
Yep.
Let's talk about the other movie released on Christmas Day. It was originally in theaters, and that is Soul over on Disney Plus.
Yay!
I loved this movie. I've watched it, I think, 3 times now.
I've seen it twice so far. And it's on my best of 2020.
It shot up to number 3.
I think it's on... It might be that it was number 2 or 3 for me.
It was one of my favorite movies last year.
Is it really that watchable that y'all have watched it a total of 5 times?
Yes. Yeah. Super watchable.
Holy shit.
It's one of those weird movies that it doesn't feel like it should be that watchable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for kids. Like, I feel like kids are going to be, like, looking at this like, wait, it's a movie about improv, jazz,
well, here's
and
the
afterlife?
Thing.
It's a little dark for kids.
Young kids, I think it'll that stuff will just go over and it'll
yeah.
be funny.
Yeah.
Because they,
yeah.
they do some
yeah.
gags and stuff like that, and that's what's going to hit home for them. Older kids who sort of have an awareness of, like, maybe life and death
yeah.
might be asking some interesting questions
yeah.
upon after watching this. But it's such a good story. It's from the same guy who did Up and
Inside Out. And Monsters, Inc.
And Monsters, Inc.
It's oh. Pete Docter, one of the best guys in
yeah.
the star. And he does the emotional make-you-cry stuff.
And I will say this... Oh, man, this is fighting with Up from, like, one of my favorite Pixar movies.
This is my
wow.
favorite of Pete Docter's movies.
Really?
I would put it above Inside Out and Up and Monsters, Inc., actually.
Okay.
That's
and I love
praise.
Monsters, Inc., but...
But this has got the voice casts of Jamie Foxx
Tina Fey
as oh. the leads.
Also, Richard Ayoade is in there, which
yep.
is, he's great. And the comedian, I forget the comedian's name, but she is the voice of Terry.
Yeah.
Who is the, so there was a short they did called Day and Night. You remember this one?
I
was
sort
like
of
two,
do.
Like, dancing outlines, and they represented day and night. Inside the outline, they had traditional animation of, like, day and night scenes.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And then they were, like, these outlines. So it was, like, two levels of animation. And I feel like they use that here.
Yeah.
When they do the afterlife stuff to make it sort of alien. Like, the Terry and Jerry, who are sort of the amorphous representation of the angels or whatever running the afterlife,
mm-hmm.
are sort of, like, they're these highlighted outlines, and everything else is traditional animation around them, so they look otherworldly.
Huh.
Do you know the basics of the story, Anna?
I actually
anything?
Don't. I didn't know anything about it until I was sitting on my friend's couch trying to find something to watch, and we were
so,
like, oh, we could watch this.
I would recommend people going blind, except Anna, who are going to ruin this whole thing.
Yeah, you guys, it's fine.
But Jamie Foxx is a music teacher who is an aspiring jazz musician. He's a piano player. His father was a jazz musician.
Yep.
His mother runs a clothing store. And basically, he at the beginning of this movie, he gets a full-time gig as the music teacher, and he doesn't want to give it up. And then he gets a call from one of his old students that who's a drummer now, played by Questlove.
Yeah, that's delightful.
And he's like, basically, he's like, you know, you're the only reason I went to school. I want to help you out. He's like, he's got this woman who is a singer and sax player, played by...
Oh, man, I forget.
It's not Taraji P. Henson. That's Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
Watched. It's somebody very notable. It's not Viola Davis. I can't remember who it is. Angela Bassett, maybe?
It might be.
But she's like a notable jazz person. And she has an opening her band for a piano player, and he basically calls him out to do the audition.
Yeah.
And his mom is like, take the teaching job, stop gigging, and he's like, no, this is a big deal. So he goes to the audition. He does well enough. He's clearly a good piano player that he's going to get the job, and then he steps in a manhole cover and dies.
That's really unfortunate.
This is like the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, this is the opening.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
Like, that's, and then basically the movie is about him trying to get back to, from the afterlife, back to Earth.
Yeah.
So that he can go to this audition and live his dream.
Yeah.
So the afterlife...
That's very depressing, actually.
He finds himself in this weird kind of part of the afterlife that is about souls.
Where
and
all,
sort
the,
of,
all the unborn souls get their personalities developed and sent down to Earth.
And Tina Fey plays, is it 22?
Yeah, so they do this thing where they mistake him for a mentor who's a soul who's going to mentor a newborn soul.
To find their sort of, not purpose, but their spark.
To find their spark, whatever their spark is, whether it's music or whatever else.
Yeah.
And he's got the name tag of like this child
yeah.
psychologist.
Yes.
So it's a mistaken identity thing. And
yeah.
they're calling up people at the ceremony. They're like, soul number 37,212, something, something. And the next, like, soul number 22. So she's been here forever. She's
yeah.
had every mentor. There's a running gag about Copernicus hated her.
Yeah.
That she made Gandhi mad at her.
Abe Lincoln.
she has basically gone through all these mentors. She doesn't want to go to Earth.
Yeah.
And he basically is like, I don't even want... He's like, I don't want to go back to Earth. And they make this sort of deal.
Yeah.
And they wind up back on Earth. I don't want to go too much into that.
No, but there's some body swap gags.
Yeah.
And hilarity ensues. Some more Pixar-esque kind of humor.
Yeah.
But the core of its story, the heart, is still there.
Yeah.
And it's... There's some scenes that really resonate.
Yeah.
Just tremendously.
It's also super funny. It's
yep.
beautiful. They always get something right, and I think this one was hair. Like they really got the motion of hair really well
yeah.
on this one, and clothing.
Well, also it's like one of the first times we've seen like New York City
New York is great.
In basically animation style. I mean, of course, like, but in Pixar style.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
Out of curiosity, at the end, does he go back to his body or does he stay in the afterlife?
I don't want to tell you the ending.
Yeah.
But I want, I
should
asked,
watch it.
But I don't want to tell our listeners.
I don't want to tell our listeners either.
All right, fine.
You should watch it.
I guess I'll have to watch this movie that sounds good.
It was super good. It was one of my favorite movies of last year, and I thought they did a great job. It's super funny. It's very clever. It feels of a piece with Inside Out, where Inside Out was about how the internal emotions work. This is sort of the notion of how do souls work and how does the afterlife work and that kind of thing.
Okay, so it's that good that you won't ruin it for me.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
All right.
I also watched, because Nick gave me access to his Vudu account.
And I buy movies like crazy.
You do buy movies like crazy.
Nick, do you like movies?
I love movies.
Huh. So I watched the movies of Brian Duffield, who's the screenwriter. He has done 4 movies, 5 movies? I think maybe, or just only 3?
I think 3 or 4.
Okay, so I watched Love and Monsters, Spontaneous, and Underwater. Was there another one that I'm missing? Or is that it?
That might be it, actually. Okay. It might just be the 3.
So Underwater was the first one I know of.
Yep.
And that is a sort of suspense horror in a deep, like, 6 miles underground of the Marianas Trench. Kristen Stewart plays an engineer. And it is basically, things go wrong in the first, like, the trailer had it. The first like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, it doesn't really stand on ceremony. It doesn't really delve too deep. Why are they there? Why are they there?
Out of curiosity, on a scale of 1 to 10, how scary is it? Because I am extremely attracted to Kristen Stewart, and I want to watch her be a hot engineer in this movie.
She is in her underwear a lot in this movie.
But I don't like horror.
It's more suspense than horror, but there's definitely, it's got some scares.
I'm a bad person to ask because I watch horror, so I have been kind of.
I don't watch a ton of horror, and I like it. It's actually more of a, it's more of a disaster movie.
Okay,
you know, are they going to make it out alive?
Gotcha.
I would say it's like a 2.
But there are some monsters.
Okay, that's fine. I love monsters. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to, like, cry while I was trying to be gay.
I don't think so. I think you'd be all right.
Cool.
But it's a really good sort of suspense movie. They're trying to get to the submarine and get to the surface before all their oxygen dies out there or their suits go.
Yep.
And there are monsters. There's a great reveal toward the end.
Yep.
It's got some nice effects. I really like this. It's not directed by Duffield. It's written by him.
Right.
And then he wrote Love and Monsters, also not direct that one.
Correct.
And I gather I've heard him that he didn't like the way they adapted or something.
Yeah, that he had some issues with like stuff they left out or like changed it a bit.
This was my favorite of the three.
Yeah.
It is sort of a post-apocalyptic. Basically, there was an asteroid coming toward Earth. In order to destroy it, they blast it with, like, nukes and chemical weapons. The chemicals fell down and turned insects and animals into, like, giant kaiju monsters.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so now, like, 95% of humanity was wiped out, and it is about this sort of nebbishy, I would say it's like one of the leads in Zombieland, basically.
Yeah.
He wants to find his high school sweetheart who's in another shelter, so he decides to leave the shelter he's in, where everyone's coupled up, and go, like, on a 2-day journey, I think.
Yeah.
Across this deadly wasteland to go and find his girl
and everyone,
at the other shelter.
And everyone in his sort of family is like, you're not going to survive.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? It's stupid. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a really fun
He meets Michael Rooker out there.
He meets a dog.
By the way, this one almost had me going to doesthedogdie.com because they put that dog in jeopardy a lot.
It does.
But does the dog die?
I can't tell you that.
I need you to tell me that.
The dog is not done.
Okay, good.
This is one of those rare ones. I watched a lot of movies for a stretch, and a lot of animals were getting killed. And then I watched this, and I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, please don't.
It did not. And
okay, good.
They do. I think comparing this to, like, a kaiju Zombieland is really the comparison I make. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's kind of sweet. It's got a really good character arc.
He basically draws a D&D monster manual.
Full of these monsters,
Traverses the highways and byways of this new world.
Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And then the last one is the one that Duffield wrote and directed called Spontaneous.
And this was my favorite of the three.
This was good, and I saw a lot of people really liking it. It is basically, it's a teen romance. Wherein, basically, kids start spontaneously exploding.
Yeah, it is actually the seniors at a certain high school just randomly start exploding.
Yep.
I really did not expect that.
Yeah, no. it's like one of them explodes, and then they start... It starts happening more.
The main character is the girl from 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah.
The main one who commits suicide, essentially.
Yeah.
And we see everything sort of from her point of view, and it's an interesting story because there's definitely parallels with things that happen in reality, like school shootings.
Yeah.
And, but it's... But this way of, like, spontaneous combustion and sort of the analogous of that.
Yeah, and she's got a relationship with, a nerdy guy.
Well, the guy is, like, he basically just says, fuck it, and is like, I'm going to tell you how I feel because we might die tomorrow.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of that Heather's, like, dark comedy to it.
When you say people start exploding, is it like fiery
explosions? A shower of blood.
No, okay, yeah, so it's like pop. Schlocky horror movie explosion.
Not cool. Schlocky, though.
The cool thing is that they don't...
They do it off camera.
Oh, they do it off camera.
You'll just hear a pop and then blood covers everything.
Yeah.
Oh my god. That's horrifying.
There's a sequence where basically everyone is running and screaming and there's pops going off. And it's
oh no.
The one in the car got me a little bit more.
Ooh, yeah.
I was like, oh shit.
Is that... Good God.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
This is one of these... One of the things about Duffield is that he can write sort of quirky and funny and good character pieces in amongst just the worst kind of horror going on.
Yeah.
And so that you're just engaged by it.
Yeah.
Huh.
I thought there was a lot of heart in this, and mm-hmm. I loved the characters and sort mm-hmm. of the relationships, like with her, the guy that they're interested in each other, but also her best friend is really fun.
Yeah.
It's just got a great sense of humor while dealing with some pretty heavy shit.
Yeah. I definitely enjoyed it. All right, and I did not enjoy the next movie, so I'm going to step out so that you guys can talk about Wonder Woman 84. All right, Randy is safely out of the room. So there will be no more hateration as we
talk. He's already expressed how much he disliked this film. And
well, he's a big baby.
Little baby man.
He will not be the first person on the internet to have done it.
No.
So what we were talking about is Wonder Woman 84. Sort of long anticipated. The original Wonder Woman movie was pretty well accepted. Even among people who generally are not into DC, a lot of people were like, that's a pretty good movie. Wonder Woman 84 seems destined to be a little bit more divisive.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, because I liked it a lot.
Did we all like it?
Yes.
It
made my best of the movies of this year.
Yep. Now, I know that that's a smaller list than normal, but...
No, actually, it was giant. There were a ton... I watched, 84 new movies this year.
I guess there's a lot of Netflix release movies and other stuff like that, if not a lot of...
I mean, it's definitely one of those years where the getting movies is definitely weird, but I watched a lot of video-on-demand stuff and stuff through Hulu, Netflix, HBO Max.
At this point, we've seen, Tenet and even stuff like, what was it, Friday?
Unfortunately, Tenet did not make my list. It was probably like 26.
Oh, Tenet sucked.
No, I didn't think it sucked. But
I love that your list had a number 26 because I'm pretty sure I watched a collective total of 6 movies this year.
I feel like that was about where I landed. But...
I used to manage a video store, so movies are ingrained in my blood in a way that that comics are.
It's like it's like a shark. If Nick stops consuming movies, he dies.
That's actually true.
Just as if sharks stop consuming movies, they die.
So hopefully the payment, we still get new content because I'm running out of things. That's why I buy so much.
It's out of oxygen.
And you will die.
And that's why.
But bringing it back around to Wonder Woman 84. So I think what maybe surprised people a little about this movie was that it was not quite, that first, or some of the early trailers that had that remix of Blue Monday.
Yep.
Yeah.
Looked like it was going to be like this poppy action fest. And it's a little bit more sort of thoughtful, and also in some ways a little campier, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely campier.
At the same time, she's clearly the same character from the previous one. Did y'all feel like it was like too big a mix from this and like a little bit of gritty World War One adventure?
No, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, honestly, I liked this movie a lot more
than the first one
because of the change in tone.
Do you think it was because it like started with her as a hero, or and didn't have to do the origin stuff?
I actually think.
Or you just like the tone better?
I like the tone better, but mostly what I think I like about this one over the other one is that I didn't feel like there was any part of this movie that was still catering to what DC wanted its film franchise to be. That movie,
you mean
even
that,
though,
like, grim and gritty,
yeah,
Christopher Nolan style?
Yeah, even though Wonder Woman 1 was very solid, it was at its core still, like, relatively dark.
Right.
Especially, like, in filters. Like, it was very dark, like, visually.
It still had a Zack Snyder film over it.
And this very much was, like, as far in the opposite direction as it could go.
He still produced it, though.
Which is so weird to me that his name was on it.
Yeah.
He had his finger in that pie for a while, and
I was kind of in on this pretty early. Whereas, like, Man of Steel, I fell out of, like, on the opening things.
Yeah.
This one with its Amazon Olympics, I was all in on it.
I thought that was a great opening.
It was.
I did too.
It was a lot of fun. I'm sure we already did the spoiler warning. We're going to go ahead and talk about full spoilers in this. But yeah, it shows Diana as a young child in a holding her own in this kind of, like, intense. Olympics course across Paradise Island.
Yep.
Yeah.
And doing all kinds of cool, risky horse riding and shooting and climbing up their crazy structures, which were, like, super well filmed, I thought, all of that.
And then she cheats.
And then she cheats, yes. she gets behind. I wasn't quite sure if this was going to, for a minute, I was like, oh, is this one of those movies where she's going to be. You know, like in every Harry Potter movie, they're like, well, kids, you lost, but because you were brave, 10 points to Gryffindor, you won.
Right. And I was kind of glad that didn't happen.
And in fact, it will turn out to be very key to the theme, which I will say this, going into it, I did not know what the themes of this movie were going to be, and I thought that was kind of cool. And in a way, I thought it was like, instead of being this pop 80s movie, the 80s, they had a little fun with it. But in a lot of ways, they were, like, kind of
very critical
of the artifice, like the superficiality of 80s stuff. Everything from Max, you know, the sort of the big bad is Maxwell Lord, who's a, wannabe, like, kind of, what is he like?
This is good, but it could be better.
Is he like a, what would you call him, like a investor? What is his actual?
I mean,
He's like an oil baron, almost.
Right. Yeah,
he
like
feels very Donald Trumpian.
He was all shady, yeah. It's just that I have actual sympathy for him by movie's end,
right.
which owes a lot to, well, it's in the script, but Pedro Pascal really did a kind of amazing job of portraying this sympathetic and yet kind of arrogant, D-bag-ish kind of guy.
Well, he's sort of bought into the sort of, you know, his life is not great. He's so desperate to be more and to have more.
Well, every time he's not, like, putting on his public face, he's desperate.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he's sad, and he has his kid that he is, like, clearly loves, but in, like, he really feels like if he is not a success that he doesn't deserve the love.
Yeah.
Right.
And then sort of we have our sort of the other plot in it has Cheetah. What's her character's
name? Kristen Wiig?
Barbara Minerva. Oh, and by the way, I thought this was a neat idea that Diana has a job at the Smithsonian as an anthropologist.
That was great.
I love it.
Some people did not like, and I kind of sense, I get this criticism, that she had spent decades kind of pining for Chris Pine's Steve Trevor. who she didn't know very long. But I will say this, I feel like I can kind of let it roll a little bit because she is a legendary Greek-type character. That's a very Greek thing to do, to pine your life away. She's immortal. What's a few decades to her? She can be sad for decades.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, she's basically stranded in a world she doesn't quite understand and doesn't have the love of her life because she can't go back to Paradise Island.
Right.
I do think that is the Greek god breakup rule, is that you're allowed 10 decades to mourn for every week of the relationship.
But I will say, I get the criticism because it's like, it doesn't feel exactly like an empowered woman if she's like, I miss my man for 10 decades.
It doesn't, which is a little off. And that's probably
She obviously should have gotten together with her new lady friend, Barbara Minerva.
That was the thing. As I was watching it, I felt like the script was originally intended to be gayer than it ended up being, because that was a pretty romantically charged meal that they shared.
It was.
There were lots of eyes.
In the Rucka and Liam Sharp, they made out that they had, like,
they're
a relationship.
Yeah.
And
what's weird is Rucka, who was very often upfront about this, still kind of tiptoed around it. It was like there had been a thing in the past.
Yeah.
Well,
but I really like the chemistry that Gal Gadot and Kristen Wiig had. I thought Kristen Wiig was amazing in this.
I loved her.
I loved her, too.
I remember being skeptical early on, and I think sometimes there's that skeptic that's like, it's the fanboy thing where I'm like, oh wait,
isn't everybody in these movies supposed to be classically beautiful? And Kristen Wiig is not always immediately classically beautiful.
Yeah.
She doesn't look... She's not like a gymnast like the Cheetah should be. But she ended up... Of course, she's supposed to... She plays someone who's like kind of this...
Frumpy nerd lady.
Frumpy nerd lady. Yeah.
Gemologist.
Who, yeah. Who through the sort of the MacGuffin of the movie, this kind of wishing stone thing, wishes to be more like Diana. But also then... I thought in a kind of neat scene in her bitterness, she's like, I don't even want to be human anymore. I know this is one of the campy things you were talking about.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, is that when you just say inhuman, why did you become a cat creature or whatever? And I'm like, because comics.
Yes.
Because it's comics. Fun. Because it's a neat new explanation for her powers. And watching her kind of sort of descent into getting everything she wanted and sort of feeling the price for it, too, but also becoming this kind of dangerous person.
Also, I just want to say that I really love the costuming and wardrobe design for this movie.
Yeah.
Because you could tell that it was done by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was the same woman, but very reminiscent of the outfits in, like, Birds of Prey, for example, where they simultaneously are, like, cool and interesting to look at, but not, like, exploitative.
Right, not like the traditional, like, very cheesecakey kind of costumes.
Like, Kristen Wiig doesn't show up with, like, a V-neck shirt that, like, goes down
to her belly
button.
Although I'm a fan of the Fast and Furious movies, it's something they do all the time.
Yeah.
They're kind of trashploitation with a heart, but that is what they kind of are.
Yeah.
The outfits all looked cool and appealing and stuff like that, but they weren't, like, super sexy.
Yeah.
There was some sexiness involved with both Kristen Wiig and
Gal Gadot. In a way that didn't kind of get into that
when Gal Gadot,
male gaze sort of thing.
Yeah,
that white dress she was wearing, though.
Kristen Wiig showed up in her studded leather jacket. I was just like, well, hello.
Yes. Let's see. There's other notable action scenes. There's a big convoy chase in it.
Which is cool.
Where she's kind of like her losing her powers at that point, right? So she's still tough, but she's struggling.
Yeah.
They definitely made out the usage of the lasso being a big thing in this one.
Yeah, and I just have so many good things to say about the fact that they moved away from, like, a sword and shield as her weapons, because I think that there are only so many creative ways you can use a sword and a shield as a weapon, especially if you don't want to rip off Captain America and bounce the shield off people. So moving to the lasso allowed them so much more, like, creative usage for stunts.
I think that's
and things
a great
like
point.
It's very iconic for Wonder Woman, but it also allows their action to really
She was actually able to, like, strike people with it by, like, kind of whirling it and, like, tagging them. And, you know, the special effects go into, like, bullet time and these guys are knocked on their ass.
Yep.
But it's also very clearly non-lethal, which I know for Justice League, the Snyder cut coming out, there's that they released that still of, like, Wonder Woman holding the severed heads from the Crimean War of some war criminals, no doubt. I'm sure they deserved it. But I'm like, that's their Wonder Woman. It's like the one at the Wonder Woman at her most extreme in the comics a few years ago when she killed Max Lord in the comics.
Yeah.
And, like,
well, maybe she does have a character arc where she, you know, in World War One, she definitely was not afraid to use violence and things like that. It kind of goes up a little bit during, like, that kind of stuff.
Nick, you're looking at this with an editor's eyes to making it all fit. I like it.
I think you kind of have to. I mean,
well,
the Snyder Cut, regardless,
ball,
is going to...
If you're going to play ball and it's in that universe, then
yeah.
think you're right. But yes, I'm very glad that they kind of went with these kind of non-lethal but very visually cool powers.
Well, she even outright says that she doesn't like guns while she destroys several handguns, just crushes them.
Yeah. But she's also kind of doing acrobatics.
Yeah.
Do like the thing, the lasso over like a beam or something like that and use it as a fulcrum.
She uses her tiara, which is really cool.
Oh, yeah, she does. Doesn't she take out like a camera?
She does a series of cameras. She does that, which I thought was fun.
It was a little weird to think that she was like doing stuff like that, which is almost Batman-y, to like hide her identity. But
didn't she do that in the television series? Didn't Linda Carter do the whole...
I don't know. I grew up in that era, but I didn't... see it.
I'm pretty sure they did, and I thought they were mimicking a lot of that sort of camp.
Well, they have
the invisible jet.
Which, while there's some absurdities as far as, like, Smithsonian keeping fuel jets and stuff like that, or Steve Trevor being able to pilot it, but the actual kind of explanation of, like, why it's invisible, while a little throwaway, was kind of a neat idea.
Yeah. Well, and also, I'm okay with campiness if it gives us a good, like, character scene, and sort of having Steve describe how flying feels to him, yeah. which sort of empowers her and gives her a reason to sort of understand flying.
Yeah.
I was, and gives her a new ability. I was like, dude,
well,
that's
speaking
awesome.
Speaking of, like, yeah. you know, homage to Wonder Woman, apparently the gliding on the winds was something that I think both Wonder Girl back in the day, but before maybe before her, Diana in the 60s, would do that. When, you know, they allowed her to fly in the 80s comics. But prior to that, she would, like, catch currents and glide on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was, they came up with a really visually spectacular way to do that.
Yeah, I guess movies. In the cartoon, I was always into Wonder Woman flying, because she did on Justice Unlimited a yeah. bit.
Yeah, and I'm used to that, but this kind of stakes out some new territory yeah. for her, and it yeah. did kind of make it this more this joyous experience.
And that visual 4th of July fireworks scene was a lot of fun, too.
Also, maybe I'm going to go ahead and assume that if anybody would know this, it would be you. Is it a scene from one of the Superman movies where he's, like, hovering, like, up in the sky over Metropolis, and, like, he could just hear everybody, like, talking? And he sort of, like, hears people who need help and, like,
yeah, I mean,
people who want stuff and things like that.
I believe they've used that in several.
Yeah. yeah. Am I crazy, or did they, like, homage that a little bit? Like, almost shot for shot?
I don't
like,
quite remember. Did Wonder
similar...
Woman do, like, super hearing at some point?
Or maybe I was just thinking of her. I don't know.
I know that
watched...
there's definitely a thing where, like all the people's wishes and stuff are heard.
Yeah,
heard.
That is what I'm talking about specifically.
Yeah.
Is
yeah she was
of...
connected to Maxwell Lord through the Lasso of Truth, and
yeah.
she was able to sort of hear it and sort of...
this was another thing. That ending was something I really liked, aside from being a great performance by Pedro Pascal.
Mm-hmm.
It was a kind of non-violent ending, but still
yeah.
very exciting and emotionally cathartic and interesting.
Yeah, I actually loved that they
it
did
it. It reminded me of, like, Morrison's pacifist but cool Wonder Woman from
yeah.
Earth One.
Yeah, I was happy that they didn't go the route of basically breaking Maxwell Lord's neck.
Yeah, I think that would have sucked.
Because I felt
you
like...
No Snyder would have done it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Which,
but we also got, I will say, my one drawback is I did not care for the cheetah fight. The
really?
The final one, sort of in the air.
I've heard that, but I liked it.
I thought it was okay. I just felt like it was very much a retread of the Ares fight from the end of the first one.
Mm.
And I just, it didn't have sort of the kinetic energy that the, say, White House fight with Cheetah did.
I think because it felt
yeah.
personal to me at that point, and like I was like, oh, it's sad to see that she has gotten to this place.
Right.
That it still had like an impact for me.
Yeah.
And also, like, I'm not too critical of, like, slightly less than great CG. Black Panther had some slightly less than great CG.
I think it was more, for me, it was the darkness. The action
yeah.
wasn't actually visually, I couldn't 100% follow it. And it was them jumping
this,
and leaping.
I do think it's good, but it could be better. but I actually did like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the White House battle was, I thought, the best action
good.
Sequence.
Any criticisms, Anna? Anything that, like, stood out for you? I think, would we all agree it's maybe a little long?
Yes. 2.5 hours was a bit long.
Well, I mean, I guess my only criticism is it was good, but it could have been gayer.
yeah, that's fair.
And that I would have been more stoked about that. But by and large, like, I'm really, really happy at how far they, like, took the where Wonder Woman was in the last Snyder thing and just, like, yanked her over to this
right.
end.
Right. It's very tonally different, and
yeah.
it makes me kind of excited for to see what she'll do in the third one.
Yeah.
Do you think that that'll be in modern times, or will they do something that's in some sort of interim time, the 90s or the early 2000s?
Huh. I mean, please God, it's way too early for early 2000s period pieces. Do not do this.
I know Patty Jenkins is out.
That was 20 years ago.
Patty Jenkins said she had a idea for a trilogy, so she definitely
and
has something in mind.
Geoff Johns co-wrote this.
He did.
He did.
I listened to some interview with her recently where she was talking about that and which stories they drew on, and that it wasn't any specific story, but little bits and pieces.
Huh.
She mentioned Kingdom Come, of course, with the armor. Oh, and of course, this had, speaking of the armor, a really cool cameo from...
Yeah.
Why can't I say the name of it? Linda Carter.
Yeah,
that was real sweet.
Very
yeah,
happy.
That was awesome.
It's funny. Some of the criticisms of it, you know, I don't think we want to get into the weeds on like the Steve Trevor's return
please,
and stuff like
please
that.
Please don't call me names. I said, please don't call me names because I liked the Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah, but I get some of the criticisms of it for sure. But I think like we there's a. maybe like a silent majority here who actually had a pretty decent time with it.
Yeah.
People who didn't like it, they really want to let you know, though.
They really do.
People are listening to this right now, and they're like, I am going to send them an email.
You guys are wrong.
I do just...
It's okay if people didn't like it.
Exactly.
Really quick, want to say that, like, I think that by and large, like, if you watched the movie and you thought, like, oh, it's too silly, or there are parts that are stupid, or oh, this doesn't, like, mesh with my adult's view of reality.
Yeah.
I think that you're probably right. Like, the movie consistently, despite Wonder Woman being the central character, it consistently frames Diana through the eyes of children.
Oh, yeah, like, you mentioned this before.
Maxwell Lord's son, through the children she saves at the end of the car chase scene, through the little girls she rescues in the mall, through Diana herself as a child, sort of, like, learning her big lesson.
Yeah.
And I do think that, like, this movie is going to be, hopefully, assuming that it doesn't get completely obliterated by people in their Facebook comments, like, something that will sort of feel for younger girls the way that, like, I don't
Superman might have been Superman when I was a kid.
Superman might have been. Yeah. It's very, I think, good at
I think that's why I like seeing movies like this, is because, yeah, there's, like, definitely, it's pretty easy for me to tap into my inner child, actually.
Yeah.
And, like, if they do it right, if it's heartfelt and stuff like that, if it's sincere and not, like, cynical-minded, and I don't think there was anything cynical in this movie.
No, it was, like, extraordinarily hopeful.
Yeah.
Like, almost, like... I can't think of anything cynical about it, actually.
And yet, I can say, though, that I think, realistically, its portrayal of the 80s showed the kind of dangers of, like, Cold War mentality, creepy toxic masculinity was everywhere in
it. Yes,
And for sure, all the sort of vacuous salesman, televangelist types, and all the kind of, you know, hucksters and junk bondsmen and all that of the era... that all the greed is good, Gordon Gekko's. There was actually a fair amount of criticism implicit in it, but it was not, the movie itself was not cynical. Honestly, and whenever we see 80s visions in, like, Stranger Things and stuff like that, it's almost always tinged to this eye of, like, oh, wasn't it
the
great?
80s were so much
we
fun.
Just played video games and listened to the Go-Go's.
Yeah.
And I kind of appreciated seeing a vision that was, while very hopeful, was critical of the 80s.
Yeah.
Anyway, so here's to Wonder Woman 3.
Wrapped up in, yeah, it was that, wrapped up in Silver Age Insanity.
Yeah.
that was definitely why I liked it.
I think, Grant, if there's any Grant Morrison fans out there, you gotta allow for some Silver Age love into your life.
Yeah, I mean,
a good
this...
MacGuffin is never a bad thing.
Yeah.
Actually, I would like to amend my criticisms. It wasn't enough like Wonder Woman Year One.
Oh, interesting.
I would like more Wonder Woman
Year One. Earth One?
Earth One.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, yeah. Wonder Woman Earth One, my bad.
I think, this is, I don't know if Randy's going to record the outro separately, but shall we call this the outro and, wish people well, and until next time,
Yo-Jo.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.